This is Windows Observer Launch Control. We are just seconds away from the start of the Observe Tech podcast. Stand by for final sequencing and launch. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And we have launch of the Observe Tech podcast. Keeping an eye on Windows and other things tech, here is your host, Richard Hay of WindowsObserver.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 87 of the Observe Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Rich Hay from WindowsObserver.com, here with you on a late Wednesday night recording session. It is the 24th of April, 2013. We're recording episode 87 late tonight because I have an obligation tomorrow, Thursday, my normal recording day. I will be chasing a small, dimpled little round ball around a golf course and looking forward to getting out there and swinging the clubs. It's been a long time. But I wanted to get the show recorded so we can get it posted and ready to go to you so you'll have it fresh tomorrow. So we've collected together our news. Now, everyone's aware we did not do a show last week, just simply overcome by events. Last week was a bit of a crazy week with news and everything else that was going on in the world. And I, like many, got wrapped up in the coverage of stuff that was going on. So I just opted not to do the reporting on the tech news side of things. And so catching up this week, episode 87, want to remind everybody as we get started, as always, we're a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's there, so check it out at techpodcast.com. I also want to point out, I'm sure many of you, if you have visited the website in the last week or so, you have been exposed to the new look, WindowsObserver.com. And that's been a long time coming. I have been on that other theme for over 2 years. And I'm sure many of you get this when it comes to either developing or software or websites or whatever it is. You kind of get set with something. It's comfortable. You've made your tweaks to it, and it's doing what you want it to do. It's kind of tough to move past that and to start to tweak things and change things and make significant changes. But had some real good feedback from some folks. So I went in search of a new design, a new theme for the website. And I'd always known that I wanted to do something of a metro/modern kind of theme on it. I mean, we do spend a lot of time talking about Windows and Microsoft-related technologies, so it kind of made sense to fit in with that type of a theme there. So I went looking, and I delved into the world for the first time of premium themes for WordPress. Now, premium themes are the themes that you obviously have to pay for, and there's tons of them out there. There's several website portals for it. The one I ended up using and become a member of was ThemeForest, and it's an opportunity for theme authors to produce some really unique and intriguing content, sell it, and they give you ThemeForest provides them the back end, and there's a revenue share and all that kind of stuff. So you go through looking for stuff, and you get to look at demos and tests that they populate with data, but it's not your data. So you don't get a real true sense of what your site and your content and the way you like your layout is going to look in some of these themes. So that is one downfall. Now, I will give ThemeForest this credit. I bought the first theme that I went for, which I thought was very unique. It really made the site look like you were looking at Windows 8 in the new modern Metro interface. You could swipe back and forth in the touch mode. It had the swipe in from the left to bring up pages and things like that, and it was really unique. However, it did have some significant limitations. Couldn't use any widgets. So that means all those plugins that help bring more information to the main screen or to the pages of the stories just wasn't available. So after fighting it for about 24 hours, oh no, by the way, this same theme also would not read all my old posts. Now, I've got over 4,400 posts on WindowsObserver.com and since I moved to WordPress. That's a lot of info. It would have required me going through every one and clicking update, so that it would generate the right information that would allow it to be presented on that screen, on those pages of that theme. And there's no way I was going to go through 4,400 posts to do this. So I needed something that was going to fit, be a little more conventional type of WordPress theme. And I did go in search, and I did find it. Now, to ThemeForest's credit, When I wrote them and told them the situation with that original theme I purchased, they did give me a refund. It was actually a site credit, so I have money, you know, stored up to purchase another theme or two if I ever go down that road again. What I settled on was a very neat Metro modern type interface, and I'm sure if you haven't had a chance to see it yet, you will soon. Go check it out at windowsobserver.com, and you will see how it kind of fits in and how it themes. You know, I had to say farewell to some banners that my good friend on Twitter, Corrine, made for me years ago, and you know, those were always at the top of the windowsobserver.com homepage. I had to say goodbye to many different things in that sense, but what the theme has allowed me to do is actually shut down more plugins than I could before. So that means there's more resources available, and it's not as being making as many requests to the database as I get into that page. So the world of premium themes is out there. There's some excellent work in that world, and there's some superb artists that are creating some great great themes for you to use for your site. But buyer beware, it's tough to kind of gauge what works and what doesn't work when you can only demo it on the website anyway. But again, to ThemeForest's credit, they were more than willing to hear my story and give me a site credit back to take care of business. So I appreciate that very much. So please go check out the new site design and let us know in the comments or via Twitter what you think of the new design. There's been a tremendous amount of great feedback. Made a few tweaks based on that, but overwhelmingly positive feedback to the new theme and the reaction to it. So thank you all very much for continuing. Can you believe this August we will celebrate 18 years of Windows Observer being around. Now, it started way back when on GeoCities, and we'll talk about that later, but 18 years that this website in some shape, form, or another has been around. So I mean, it's a tremendous thing. So it's a great reason to update and a great reason to celebrate the 18th year as well. So thanks again for all your support. So let's jump into a few things. Go down the news list here. And the first one I'm going to read to you about is from GeekWire. In this past week, an app was released for the Xbox 360 console from Pizza Hut that actually lets you order a pizza using your Kinect on your Xbox 360. You can move the ingredients in and out with your hands and body motion. And a lot of people made jokes about that, you know, hardcore gamers don't have to get out in front of the Xbox now even to order food, and it just gets delivered to you. But it goes to show the breadth and width of the capabilities of this console. And we're going to talk a little bit later about the new announcement that is the date that we're going to hear about the next version of Xbox, whatever that is. And there's been a lot of rumors and speculation running around. So that date's coming. So, you know, it's just another expansion of the capabilities of this console that is very long in the tooth when you think about it. When you think about it coming out in 2005, that thing's been out for on 8 years now. So, you know, the Kinect helped refresh it a little bit, the new dashboard with all the entertainment options. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch as it transitions to the new console. And speaking of Xbox, last week the news broke, 27 months now, top console in the United States. And again, I don't know how that's going to get broken. I guess it's possible between the release of the new Sony PlayStation device, the PS4, I guess you can call it, and the new Xbox, there might be an opportunity there because of overlap and what console's been released yet. However, I think it's going to be tough to knock the Xbox 360 off, or the Xbox itself off the top of that pile. 27 months top in the U.S. console. Speaking of the future of Xbox, the 21st of May was announced today by Major Nelson, otherwise known as Larry Erb, the director of content at Xbox Live, that the 21st of May will be the day that the future of Xbox becomes public. It'll go down at 1 o'clock Eastern Time, or 10 a.m. Pacific Time. On the story, I've got a link to the time, and you can actually go and look worldwide at what time it is in your local time zone. They are going to live stream this event, as well as have it available on the Xbox 360 console. And for those in the U.S. and I think Canada, it's going to be live on Spike TV as well. So we're going to get that taste of, and according to some of the kind of tongue-in-cheek comments Major Nelson has made in his blog post, I think we're really going to see a console, as opposed to what Sony did when they revealed no console, talked a little bit about capabilities, and showed a controller. I think we're going to see the real deal. And then just a few weeks later is the E3, the Electronics Entertainment Expo in Los Angeles in June. And they are going to tie in all the games and release games and things of that nature. So that month or so is going to be a big time of information coming out about Xbox Next, whatever Xbox Next is. I keep wanting to say 360. A lot of people are saying, oh, it's going to be called 720. Like my friend Sean Keen, I disagree with that. I don't think it's going to just double the number and be called Xbox 720. I hope they get very creative with whatever that name is, so it's got a catch and a hook. Although I don't think we need a lot with the Xbox because it's gained such a popular base, but you never know. So lots going on in the Xbox world, so we're going to be watching that for sure. Some really neat tidbits that Microsoft has recently released that I wanted to tell you about. These both were posted about on the Windows Club, which is a great resource website for those of you looking for information. The first one is a virtual CD-ROM control panel from Microsoft that lets you mount an ISO disk image in Windows XP, Windows Vista, and Windows 7. Now, you had to have third-party software in XP and Vista to be able to mount or burn even ISO images to a DVD or a CD-ROM, burnable disk, right? With Windows 7, you got the capability to click on an ISO file, which is an image file for a CD-ROM or DVD-based image, and right-click on it and say burn, and it would burn it. But XP and Vista didn't have that capability either. With Windows 8, you have both. You have the capability to right-click an ISO file and burn it to a disk, or you have the capability to mount it, and it looks just like another drive in your operating system, and you can access the file, you can install from there, you can do anything with it that you would normally do with a CD-ROM or DVD image. Well, what they've done is released this control panel applet, and it's a driver that adds that same capability to Windows 7, Windows Vista, and Windows XP. So it's a pretty slick, now it's not supported by Microsoft, but it's very straightforward to use. You do the installation, it's got a README text file that tells you exactly what to do and how to get through there, and then you've got that capability on Windows XP, Vista, and Windows 7. Now, just as a reminder, don't forget, we are less than a year away. We are 10 days short of a year before the support for Windows XP expires in April 2014, so just be aware that if you're using XP, you got to move on. The other one I want to point out is from the Microsoft Research Guys, and this one is called Mañana Mail Add-in for Outlook. It allows you to schedule mail, cancel mail, or undo send mail. Now, this is for users who are on an Exchange server, and you have to be connected to the Exchange server for this to work. But it lets you do things like put an email in and tell it to release it at a certain time. It allows, you know, and it kind of enhances the cancel and undo stuff when it comes to the email. So very handy. Now, I want to point out that there was one of these done by Microsoft Research called Attachment Checker. And that eventually made it into Office 2013, Outlook 2013. So this stuff that Microsoft Research does is not just a fly-by-night thing. It makes it into real products eventually down the road. So I would expect that if this one, you know, shows its way down the road, it's going to end up in one as well. All right, moving on to some other things. How about a little space talk? I have to point you to this astronomy picture of the day from NASA. It's the one for 22nd of April, 2013. And it is a new image of the Horsehead Nebula in infrared taken by the Hubble telescope. Now, you know, the Horsehead Nebula is one of the most visible nebulas that amateur astronomers are looking for all the time. It appears in Orion's Belt. Orion's a very familiar star formation out there in the night skies. And the Horsehead Nebula is part of the Orion Nebula, or otherwise known as M42, that's its messier name, and it's an awesome target. It's easy to see. I can see it in my 6-inch daub very easily in a dark place. They have an image here on this page that is the head of the horse in the Horsehead Nebula, which is part of the larger Orion Nebula, and it's done in infrared, and it is an absolutely stunning image. You need to copy this, paste it to your desktop, and use it as desktop background. It is just beautiful. But you need to check that out. It's just very unique to see the beauty that's out there in our universe. On another space-related note, this story's from Engadget. You got to go watch this movie, this video, SpaceX. Now, we all know SpaceX from what they've already been doing, and that is two successful cargo flights to the space station, taking cargo up and bringing cargo back, using their Falcon 9 rocket launching from Cape Canaveral in Florida. What you might not be aware of is they're working on some other stuff as well. And one of those projects that they're working on is vertical takeoff and landing of a rocket. I mean, we're talking Lost in Space type stuff where you see a rocket touch down on a planet and it fires its retro thrusters and sets itself down quietly and calmly on a planet. Well, the SpaceX version of this is called the Grasshopper VTOL. And it went to a 840 foot from a setting spot, not firing. It fired its engines, lifted off, rose to a height of 840 feet, three times its best previous attempt, and it hovered there for 25, 30 seconds, and then slowly lowered back down to its pad, touchdown, engines off, success. Absolutely amazing stuff. You got to go check out that YouTube video for that because it is just something else. On another space-related note, this story from ARS Technica, a private company. We've heard about this before. The story started to get talked about when it was called Mars One, and this private company is looking to put people on Mars. It wants to man the first Mars colony, human space colony. Well, they have opened the door for people to apply, and they just released a press release this past Monday, and there is an opportunity now to put your name on a list and talk about the possibility of you being an astronaut in this Mars colony. Apparently, they've already had over 10,000 messages of interest about it, so there's a lot of people looking to go, or at least expressing some interest to go, and it looks like they will be putting supplies on the planet in 2016, and then 7 years later, 2023, which is what? That's 9 years, right? No, 10 years. Oh, man, I can't do my math. 10 years from now, they'll be putting humans on the planet to explore Mars. So you need to go check this out. There's links to the press release. If that is something that kind of, you know, tickles your fancy to do, I'm sure there's some requirements and some age limits and health requirements and things of that nature. But if you want to throw your name in a hat, now's the opportunity to go do that. And there's a big story floating around Twitter right now on the internets about a young lady who's 15 years old. I think her handle is Astronaut Abby or something like that. But she plans to put her name in the hat for that trip. So that means she will be 25 when they land on Mars. So just amazing stuff. All right, moving on from the space stuff, let's talk a little bit about Twitter. Now, you know, I mentioned that we didn't do a show last week. It was a bit of a crazy week when it came to the news stuff, just the normal kind of news things that were going on with everybody knows what happened in Boston and Texas and things of that nature. Molly Wood from CNET really laid into Twitter, and she's not the only one. There's been a lot of other people who have really laid into Twitter this past week for a lot of different reasons, but mainly two. One was several CBS News Twitter accounts getting hacked, and then the most recent thing and significant one was the AP's official Twitter account got hacked. I forget who they say it was, Syrian National Rebels or something like that, but they basically posted a tweet that said there had been explosions in the White House and that President Obama had been injured. It actually caused a dip in the stock market. Now, that very quickly recovered because the news was refuted and it was told it was false and that they had been hacked. But it's an important thing because if that kind of a tweet from a valid, verified, reputable account can cause that kind of damage to the stock market, granted, it recovered quickly, but that's of concern because that can really have an impact on a lot of different levels. So a huge call this week to Twitter to get two-factor authentication sorted out and implemented when it comes to Twitter. Now, two-factor authentication, Microsoft has done this in the last week. Google's been doing it, and several other sites, including my banking site, for instance, do two-factor authentication. And what the basics of two-factor authentication is you have a username and password, but you also have to provide one additional level of identity to prove that you are who you are. For instance, a cell phone number, so that when you log in or attempt to log in, a code is sent to your cell phone, which you should be possessing, and then you would be able to put the code in that came to your phone in a text message, and it would let you in. If you're on a trusted machine like your home desktop, home laptop, or something like that, you can make a setting that will allow that to always do that and not have to get a code. But the goal here is that if it's not one of your normal points of access, that second point would trigger up, and then you would, you know, obviously the person who has your username and password is not going to get in from an unknown or unrecognized computer because they don't have your phone to get the text message or maybe your email account to get the email. So it's intended to help kind of prevent those simple, straightforward hacking attacks that take your username and password. So a lot of push, a lot of heavy pressure on Twitter, and apparently the rumors and reports are that they are doing it. It's in testing, and it's expected to be released very soon, whenever very soon is. So, you know, Twitter took their lumps this week when it comes to everything that was going on, and they are taking the steps now to get that rolling and get it fixed. On another Twitter level, another Twitter kind of perspective is the upcoming shutdown of TweetDeck and all the TweetDeck mobile apps. We kind of known this was coming, but what we didn't know was a specific date, and that date is now May 7th, which, let's see, that is going to be 2 weeks, a little bit less than 2 weeks from now. So TweetDeck Air, which is runs on Adobe, that means my all-time favorite version of TweetDeck, which was TweetDeck Yellow. That it ran on Air. It was after Twitter bought it. You can even still use it now. For the most part, it still works. You can go find it on an old program download site and run it. But, you know, those of you that have been on it, it's going away. So TweetDeck Air is going away in all its versions, and all the TweetDeck mobile apps are going away. So on May 7th, they're going to get pulled out of all the stores and existing installs. Get this, if you are using it right now, which many of them still do work, those existing installs are going to be shut off because they are not compatible with the new API. And so they're going to come to a screeching halt as far as functionality goes when it comes to using it for Twitter. So it's time to move. There's lots of alternatives out there, both on a mobile level and a desktop OS level, including an official app now on Windows 8. You've got MetroTwit on the desktop for Windows 7 and Windows 8, which is what I'm currently using, and I'm finding that does the job that I need it to be able to do, and it lets me get down in the weeds as far as I need to. But the change is coming. You may as well go ahead and take the leap, get in a new program, and start learning that new program. All right, enough about Twitter for now. Let's talk about this scary story. And it's scary for me because I'm a HostGator customer. I host WindowsObserver.com and on HostGator. And so when I saw this story, this just kind of freaked me out. But apparently a former employee of HostGator was arrested and charged with rooting over 2,700 servers. He had stuck some backdoor and digital key that basically gave him access to anything and everything on those servers. Now, he was terminated from his job after about 5 months. This occurred last February, and within that like day or so after his dismissal, HostGator officials discovered the backdoor, shut it off, and made it mute, so it was no longer possible for this individual to access those things. Now, it's taken a year for this news to break, which is kind of weird. You wonder why and all of that stuff, and I'm assuming it was in the courts or going through a charge process. But, you know, that's a person who had full access to all the servers under HostGator's care and obviously used that access inappropriately and installed this stuff. It does not appear, according to HostGator, that any of it was used in any way, but still, that is something that just kind of gives you shivers down your spine when it comes to that kind of access on servers. So, personally, I'm glad they sorted it out. I'm glad they caught him, and I'm glad they shut it down. but it does make you wonder and be concerned when you're the customer of anybody, because our world, our existence, and let's just talk specifically about tech when it comes to servers and hosting, our trust is in the hands of you know, admins that 99.9% of do their job right, take that trust level appropriately, and respect it, and don't abuse it. It's unfortunate that the less than 0.1% that caused the issues and caused the concerns, but I'm glad HostGator was able to catch up with that and figure it out. IE, Internet Explorer, came out with a new ad this past week, which is very interesting. It kind of is alludes to the tracking of somebody on the internet and what you do and where you travel to on the web and things like that. And of course, you know, there was a lot of controversy about Internet Explorer coming out with the do not track option. Well, this story talks about that television ad and talks about tracking protection and talking about being an effective tool in keeping your online privacy safe. You know, privacy is of an utmost concern. I mean, what you do online becomes becomes a record. It's cataloged somewhere. It's archived somewhere. You know, you can even delete the tweet, and you might not be able to stop it from being archived on the internet. So you have to approach the use of social media, the use of the websites, the use of anything that is accessible publicly. You have to approach that with an attitude of, you know, do I want that to appear on the front page? Would I be happy with my grandmother seeing that, for instance? Would I be happy with my family members seeing that, for instance? So you have to approach it that way, because if you're out there living your life, remember the story from a couple weeks ago? There was the young lady who was hired to be this youth ambassador, police chief thing in the UK. Then they went back and looked at her Twitter from when she was younger, and she talked about doing illegal things and very inappropriate behavior. She was fired. She was fired from this job that she got a lot of attention about getting, and it was a great position and a trust position. But her history came back and haunted her because of what she put online. A lot of people cried and said, that's not fair. She was younger. Okay, I get that. But in this day and age, even in our younger selves, our stuff is out there. Our information is out there. So you have to just weigh that in and take a picture of things and decide, where do I want to fall out at in this picture? Where do I want to be from day one that I'm accessing this information and publicizing this information? And where do I want to be down the road? And what's my goal? And if those things don't meet up with getting you to your goal, you shouldn't be doing them. You shouldn't, you know, as fun as it might be, or as exciting as it might be, or as funny as it might be to share with your friends and joke around like that, it's not going to be taken as a joke someday. And that's the day you're really going to regret that you were at that point. So it's a tough situation, but you've got to be savvy when it comes to your privacy. And every browser manufacturer is taking their own lead and their own kind of twist on it and trying to make it safer and safer. And Internet Explorer is the do not track and privacy protection there. So you have to make a decision. My only thing to you is use a current and modern browser. Don't be on that old stuff that's floating around out there. It's no good, and it won't protect you, and it just won't do the web the way it can now with all the features that it's capable of doing. All right. My friend Alex Wilhelm at The Next Web wrote this story about the start button. Now, you've probably heard all the stories that are going out there about you know, the next version of Windows. It's being called Windows 8.1. It's being called Windows Blue. And they are, I'm trying to get this story to come up on the website, but it's just wanting to give me a hard time. I want to pull this up so I can share it with you and talk a little bit about what he was saying. One of the rumors is that Windows Blue or Windows 8.1 is going to come with the start button back on the desktop. Now, there's a lot of people who have been screaming for that. There's a lot of people who wants that feature to be back again, and they want that start menu that we knew and that everybody knew in Windows 7. And he writes about, because the rumor is, here's the rumor, the start button's coming back to the desktop, but guess where it takes you? It doesn't bring up the old style Windows 7 and previous version of the Windows menu, the little box in the lower left corner. It actually takes you to the new start screen that's on Windows 8. Now the start screen replaced that start, The start screen replaced that start menu. And in all reality, it is a better implementation of the start menu. It's more configurable. You have the live tiles. You can arrange them any way you want to. And you actually have more real estate to lay out what you access quickly and want to have your hands on. And of course, it, just like in the old search menu, I used to use it all the time. I would hit the Windows key on the keyboard and start typing the familiar name of the program I was looking to run, and then I hit return. Well, guess what? That same feature exists on the start screen in Windows 8. You hit the Windows key, it takes you to the start screen, you just start typing, and the search starts. And it even gives you deeper, in-depth searches into all the apps and all the information that you have around and the different ways you can open it up. So, you know, I get that, and Alex's point here is, if it's only going to go to the start screen, why put it back? And I think part of the reason why it's being put back is a comfort level. People like the familiarity of that orb in the lower left corner. And, you know, it might just be taking them to the start screen, but maybe that will help people realize, I don't know. You know, there's some talk about other functionality returning. But as of right now, in the lower left corner, if you drag your mouse all the way down to the lower left corner, you get the little symbol for the start screen. You click it and it comes up. So, you know, I don't know. You know, Microsoft's listening to customers. People want that start button back. I don't think it doesn't sound like anyway, based on everything I'm reading, that the start menu itself is coming back, but it's going to go to the start screen. And again, in my opinion, the start screen way out functions the old start menu. But again, I don't get it because I've been happy with Windows 8 the way it is. The lack of the start button doesn't bother me because there's other ways to get around the system, and you just got to take the time to learn them. So just interesting, funny story there. Facebook Home, which came out a couple weeks ago, apparently after 1 week, 500,000 installations from the Google Play Store. However, that has not been all rosy and cheery. According to this story, a significant number of one-star reviews for the app, which is basically Facebook Home, is it takes over the home screen of your Android, and it's what you see when you open things up, and you got to move past it to get to other functions of the phone. But half a million downloads is what they call a modest start. This story is from the Next Web. But they're really talking about the feedback. Let's see. Where did they say? All right. 5,617 of the total 10,905 reviews, about 50%, were one-star ratings. So, and there's no information on to see how many people have actually uninstalled the app once they downloaded the half a million. So there's a big question mark about how good is this thing? How well is it being perceived? But for over half of the reviews to be one star, yikes. I mean, that right there is going to be interesting. Now, that was a week for half a million downloads. In comparison, they point out that Instagram had 1 million downloads in 24 hours when it came out last April. So demand-wise, it's just not there in the same way it was for something like Instagram. So something else we'll be keeping an eye on, but a lot of people installing it, not real happy with it. Want to point you to a great story over at Tech Talk at PC Pit Stop, which is a site I contribute to, on a weekly basis, and they've started featuring the Observe Tech podcast. But if you've not ever heard of family safety continues to exist in Windows 8. And they've done a great post about how to use it and some great tips and tricks for how to implement the family safety features in Windows. Now, it's just like antivirus software. It exists. It's in the system. But if you don't use it, you gain no benefit from it. So as a parent, as a guardian, as somebody who's responsible for others, that might be something you want to look into because it gives you some tools to monitor and limit what folks can do. And I promise that motorcycle you hear in the background is not, I'm not on the street recording this show. That's actually my clock that's up on the wall. I forgot I put batteries back in, and I now get the Harley motor sound at the top of every hour. So anyway, if you heard that in the background, that's what that was. So anyway, family safety, it's there. You got to use it if you want it to be effective and to help you do things like watch, monitor, and limit what your kids are able to do on the internet. We mentioned two-factor authentication for Twitter. Well, Microsoft actually did flip the switch last week. So two-factor authentication for Microsoft accounts is turned on. Fairly easy to set up. My recommendation is that first you go to your Microsoft account on your trusted PC, on that desktop or laptop or whatever it is you use, and you make it a trusted machine first. So when you log in for the first time, it'll pop up the thing to give you to send a code to you, and there's a check block that says, I log in often on this machine, don't make me do this every time. That becomes a trusted machine. That should be a machine that's in your control, in your possession, and that you maintain control of over all the time. If it's not, don't do it. Otherwise, you're defeating the purpose of two-factor authentication. So you do that, and it will make that. And then when you choose to select two-factor authentication on a trusted machine, you actually you don't have to do a code again to implement that. So it worked very well. I wrote an additional post alongside of that that I had some problems with a couple apps. My SkyDrive app on Windows Phone actually got signed out because I had to change. When you access a Microsoft account email, whether that be Outlook.com or a Hotmail or whatever, live, you have to use what's called an app password. Now, Microsoft has set this up. It's available in the Microsoft account settings, and it's just a random string of letters. So you request an app password. You write that down, and then you go to your Windows Phone, and that's what you enter for your Hotmail.com, Live.com, Outlook.com email accounts. Now, obviously, when you're using a Windows Phone, for instance, your Microsoft account is how you sign into the phone. It's how you're all connected, so it knows that account. So that meant my SkyDrive account, my SkyDrive app, was signed out because the password changed. So what happened was, I ended up trying to use the app password because that's what I assumed had to happen with the SkyDrive app. Well, it turns out it signed itself out because it saw a different password on the email account. When I re-entered the original password for my Microsoft account on that phone, SkyDrive logged in. I did have to authenticate it, so I did have to go through the process of getting a code. I entered the code, and then it was authorized. So the only other app that I've discovered in Windows Phone that is not working with this two-factor authentication or an app password is what's called the Dev Center, and it's actually just an app that's available from Microsoft for developers to follow your app in the Microsoft Windows Phone Store so you can follow downloads, crashes, and things like that. So there may be some others. The key will be they're most likely apps that log in with your Hotmail account. If it's been set up to take two-factor authentication, you can go through that process and it will work. If it hasn't, maybe an app password will work, but not every app is made to work with that either. So I imagine there will be several Microsoft apps that will be updated over the next who knows how long, a short period of time. It should be short-term to make them all work again. So there'll be a lot of updates coming out to get things to work properly with that. Also, a story I wanted to reference to under the idea of two-factor authentication. It works with Xbox. You can set it up with Xbox Live. Major Nelson has a blog post at his site about how to do that, so I've linked to that. Wanted to make sure I pointed you towards the Microsoft Windows Compatibility Center. This place has turned into a real resource, a crowdsourced collection of telling you what works with what OSs. And people get to vote. They get to say, yes, this works for me on X system. It looks at Windows 7, Windows 8 RT, and Windows 8. And what it does is it allows you to know what software and hardware works with those OSs. And again, it's very crowdsourced. There's links to commentary from different people and their experiences with those things and how they do or don't work or what they've done to work around things. So most definitely a solid way of letting you have an idea of what hardware will work, what hardware doesn't work, and what software won't work as you look to upgrade or maybe go buy a new device or something for your computer and you want to make sure it's compatible with Windows 8 or Windows 8, RT or the other one, it's measuring Windows 7. There is no Windows Vista or XP in this system, compatibility center. Wanted to let you know that Microsoft made more announcements this week about the availability of the Surface RT. It's going to be available in more countries around the world over the next couple months. In fact, I think today, which is actually the 25th of April in Malaysia, the Surface Pro has just become available. I actually know Surface RT. Mexico is going to have the RT by the end of this month, and then Korea and Thailand in June. Surface Pro is going to a whole list of countries by the end of May. Australia, Austria, Belgium, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Hong Kong, Ireland, Italy, Luxembourg, New Zealand, Netherlands, Norway, Portugal, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, and the United Kingdom. So I know the folks in all of those countries are excited, especially the UK folks. I've seen them talking about it a lot. And then by the end of June, Surface Pro is going to be in Korea, Malaysia, Russia, Singapore, and Thailand. There's not a whole lot of launch info or specifics about dates. More of that's going to come, so you want to follow the @Surface account on Twitter, and that will help keep you up to speed on what specifics are as the different launch dates get closer. Okay, what's next? Saluto, my friends at Saluto. I tell you what, these guys, it's a company based out of Israel, and they make a great piece of software. And they have a free tier, and it allows you to install the software on a friend's computer. And you know the people I'm talking about. You're the family tech support. You take care of mom, dad, brother, sisters, whoever's, uncle, auntie, best friend, a family friend, it doesn't matter. It allows you to install a piece of software on their system that then is connected to you. You have an account. And it allows you to keep track of simple things on this system, like how long boot up is taken, what programs are starting up in boot up that could be removed or delayed that allows the system to start up faster. And they just opened up today. They expanded into the business world. They are offering a few different business-related plans for their service that include new features like easy remote access. I mean, Saluto is great because if I'm monitoring a friend's computer and I find out a browser toolbar got installed that's just going to slow it down, I can actually, whether that computer's online or not, I can click a button, and next time that thing boots up, it will remove that toolbar. And it also does a great job of communicating to the user, and it pops up a little window in the corner and says, hey, Richard's taking care of your computer. He did this, 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 and this. So it's a great resource. Go check them out at Saluto.com. Check out their new offerings. It, like I said, it does have a free tier that allows you to connect to a limited number of computers. I think it's 5, maybe it's 3 with the new update. And there is some limited remote connectivity things. But so the paid plans have more features, obviously. So you got to go check them out. Along with that, they also released a kind of top 10 list of laptops, that recommendations for buying them, based on their number of crashes being tracked in Saluto. So Saluto's got this massive database of information from computers that are being tracked. It's all anonymous. And they're able to look at how often a certain computer has crashes, has hangs, and has any issues in average boot up time. So if you're looking for some interesting data on the top 10, go check that out. The official Facebook app got updated for Windows Phone last week, introduces live tiles, all the sizes of live tiles. Personally, I've not been real impressed with the live tiles. It keeps repeating old information that I sent out, and I'd rather see updates from my friends pop up on that or pop up an indicator that there's a new update. I'm just not really, it's faster. Yes, it runs faster on Windows Phone 8. It was built to and made to in this update. But all in all, not real thrilled with the overall experience of the official Facebook app on Windows Phone. Twitter Music came out last week. That released on Friday, I think it was. Very slick interface. We got a post up about that with several screenshots and kind of how it all ties together, how it either ties into iTunes or radio or Spotify. But very, very slick, very neat. And they're going to be able to crowdsource so much about music. There's even a post late this week that talks about them creating a television show of some kind that's going to talk about the top 10 trending songs on Twitter each week. So kind of like the old Dick Clark, top 40 countdown stuff, Casey Kasem. And then the last thing I want to mention is an app that got released today. It was called Indigo. And it's kind of Siri for your Windows Phone, and it's slick. I've played with it. I've messed around with it. I've used it in several different ways and tried to have it do things for me, and it's very effective. It comprehends the voice recognition is superb. It obviously doesn't get it 100% right, but I don't even think that other one called Siri on Apple iPhone does it, you know, perfectly all the time. So it's something that's growing. It is considered a beta, so it might have some glitches and hitches in its step while it's still learning. But all in all, pretty slick. So you want to go check that out if you're running Windows Phone 8, by the way. You can't run it on any of the other Windows Phone versions. So something to have a little bit of fun with. And I did, I posted, are you a fan of Apple? I think Indigo said, you know, I prefer to keep those opinions to myself. I said, are you a fan of the iPhone? And says, you know, I'd much rather hear what your opinion is. And then I asked, is Windows Phone your favorite phone? And she says, you know, I work on all OSs. I don't have to have a favorite. So a little bit of humor tied in there as well. So please go check out Indigo for those developers and make sure you're taking a look at those kind of things. There's some really slick, neat apps being developed by the developer community, and you just sometimes can't discover them. You got to dig deep into Windows Phone Store and go looking for this kind of thing. Okay, that's the end of the news list. Before I close, I just want to remind everybody that we are always concerned about safety on the internet, safety on our computers, making sure our antivirus is up to date, making sure our OS updates are installed, making sure the latest and greatest security updates are installed for all the helper stuff that's installed on our OS. But along with all that, don't forget, step out into the real world. Experience real people. You never know when things are going to change drastically for you or a family member or a friend, as things did last week in several different locations around the world. So take a moment, take a deep breath, you know, spend time with your family, get out from in front of that computer screen, and do the things with your family that you're going to appreciate and that you're going to cherish. Because you just never know. That life is fragile, and we got tremendous examples of that last week. And life is courageous, and we got awesome examples of that last week as well in every event that occurred. So no matter your point in life, no matter your stage in life, please be safe, be careful, and we'll see you next week. Take care.